This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Can you hear us?
Hello.
I can hear you.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, sweet. Even better, you know, I thought there was a pile of dog s*** before, but it was a sock, so things are looking good.
You know what's all weird? Right. Like, I've gotten to the point where I'm annoyed that Ken Pom says Michigan State's going to win. Against us.
They are going to
win. It's only 49%, and I'm still annoyed. No, they're not.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. The Hammer and Rails podcast has returned. Yes, we are back, ladies and gentlemen, and we are.
Yeah, we're gonna not say that. We're not gonna no. Was that prepared, or you just like get to that moment and you just hope something clever comes out and that
can I hope?
But that was not it. Yeah. I don't want to end up on like.
It's like my sex life. I just get there and I'm like, oh, I hope I pull this off.
We don't want to end up on Deadspin, like Hammer and Rails.
Just like your sex life, you didn't pull that one out.
Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. Yes, that's right. We are back, and we are actually podcasting. We remember how to do these things. It's just a matter of getting a few of us together and finding some time to talk about Purdue sports. And tonight, I, Travis Miller, a.k.a. T-Mill, a.k.a. Dr. Miguel Sanchez, have two guests with me tonight. We have, first from God's country up in Lafayette, we have the esteemed Casey. How you doing, Casey?
Confused. What? Miguel Sanchez?
It's always important to have an alias just in case you need one. Anyway, and our second guest tonight from Kansas State University, where he has recently moved, we have Drew, the legend of Sean McCarthy out there. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well. How are you, Travis?
I am good. We have quite a bit to talk about tonight, as we haven't podcasted since, I think, December. And obviously, Purdue on a 15-game winning streak in basketball, leading the Big Ten at 8-0. Everything is just going our way right now, and it's an exciting Big Ten race, wouldn't you say?
First of all, we need to make sure we know that we are undefeated in the continental USA and also in actual basketball facilities.
This is true. This is true. No one else can claim that.
Okay, that makes me think we lost in Hawaii and or Alaska. We are undefeated on U.S. soil. We lost in the Bahamas, which is a foreign country.
Fair enough.
And we lost lost in a damn ballroom.
We lost in a ballroom. I feel like that is the key. That as long as we don't play in a ballroom, we're okay.
We lost on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, in a ballroom.
We're 3 weeks into January.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Right? I think what stands out so much is the way that they managed to turn it around in 24 hours, because we played a pretty damn good Arizona team and just wiped the floor with them the next day. And that's, I think the fact that they wiped the floor with them is kind of what started this whole thing. And Arizona's only lost once since, and they're doing pretty well themselves. So if you look at what we've done during the streak, we have a win over the Pac-12 leaders. We have a win over the second place team in the ACC with Louisville. And we have a win over two Big East teams, which the Big East is one of the highest RPI conferences out there. So I know that a lot of people are like, well, the Big Ten's down and everything. Well, no, not really. We have the wins out of the conference,
Travis,
the Big Ten to show that we
down.
Are. Oh, the yeah. Big Ten is a
the
flaming pile
garbage.
Of horse crap
like,
this year.
Wet, hot, steaming, just piles of garbage.
Bad garbage.
We have two national title contenders.
This is true.
And I also think you can say Purdue is the top five team in the country and the Big Ten is garbage. I don't think those two things have to be separate. Like, it's garbage and we are, like, destroying the garbage.
Big Ten's definition has just changed because for the last handful of years, it's been a whole bunch of really good teams, solid teams, very little bad teams, but no great teams that are actually going to challenge for a title. This year, there's no depth. Once you get past Ohio State, it's almost all garbage. It's Ohio State,
I mean,
Michigan, Michigan State, and us.
Some
Maryland
of those teams earlier in the year, I feel like the Big Ten, I mean, Northwestern should be good. They, you know, they just
should
got
they?
Hurt. And I feel like, I mean, they played us within what? Pretty close, right?
That
they're
was
the,
worst
the only
game
team
since the ballrooms.
But yeah, but when they were healthy, they could cause some problems for teams. I feel like when Maryland was healthy, they could cause some problems for some teams. I think our Maryland road win is undervalued now just because they lost, what, Jackson after they played us?
I think Maryland's good.
I think they've lost two guys since they played us.
Yeah, they have.
But Jackson was
real
their
players.
Jackson was their guy that was, you know, the top level talent, and losing him submarine their season. So I feel like Northwestern should be decent, and then I feel like Maryland should be good. But yeah, injuries have just kind of wiped those two teams out. And below that, I mean, I'm not sure what's going on with Iowa and Wisconsin, and like they've just forgot to recruit the last two or three years because they don't even like. I don't look at either of those teams and go, "Well, there's a lot of talent coming up. It's just young." I was like, "Oh man, teams are bad."
I don't know. Wisconsin's draft class has been making some like they had some pretty high recruits. They were bringing in some big four-star guys. They just haven't developed. They don't have scoring anywhere.
They forgot they have to score to win, or like, because I mean, nobody on that team can even shoot very well. How do you get a whole team like that? And I mean, Purdue has four or five probably better shooters. You take five guys on Purdue before you would pick one guy in Wisconsin as far as shooting the basketball.
Okay, you're saying that about a team that has like four guys shooting over 40% on the year.
Well, I mean, still, we'll go five deep, and then you maybe get to a guy from Wisconsin. Come on. Dude, Wisconsin always has at least some guy that can, some lurchy guy on the outside that can bang in threes under Bo Ryan. I think guard is, this whole transition is not going quite as well as they thought it would.
I think we're talking too much about Wisconsin.
Yeah, probably.
Well, does the Big Ten get a fifth team into the NCAA tournament? I think we can agree that Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and Ohio State, barring a collapse, those four are in. Do we get a fifth team?
I think they'll get five. I think someone will get hot. I think Maryland,
who?
Northwestern, maybe Nebraska. They're not terribly far off.
Like, maybe Nebraska. Like, I don't see anybody else being even in a position to get hot and get in.
Like, I don't think right now any of them would, but KenPom's pretty friendly towards Maryland. I think they have a couple guys that are legit good that can take over games.
Yeah, where what's his name? The redheaded guy?
Kevin Huerter. Yeah. And they've got a more favorable schedule down the stretch here. Looks like their toughest game is at Purdue, and then they actually host Michigan State. They host Michigan State on Sunday. So, I mean, aside from those two, they could get on a bit of a run here, and they also have the RPI right now. They're the only other team in the top 50 of the RPI, which I know it's the RPI, but you know the committee still uses it. So
I still contest that we're doing this wrong. If you're talking about Big Ten, you should just talk about the top. The bottom, well, maybe they'll get in, but they don't matter. Yeah, those teams aren't dangerous.
How long has it been since the Big Ten has only got, I mean, it hasn't got five teams in? I mean, I can't think
I think in 2008. You guys go ahead and talk. I'll look it up. I think it was 2008.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the Big Ten is just such trash. And I think Casey and I were talking before. We don't think Ohio State's very good either.
Ohio State's good. I mean, there's no doubt they're good. And they've played very well on the road, too, which is a concern for me. And there's a real possibility that when they come to Mackey, they're still going to be undefeated because they have four straight home. How they got four straight home games, I have no idea. But they get four straight home games,
but it's four games in the span of, like, not a lot of time.
Yeah, they actually play Monday, Thursday this week.
Yeah, Big Ten schedule is really compressed this year because we lost a week to move up to make sure we get into the Madison Square Garden for our tournament because, you know, heart of Midwest basketball is New York City.
Yeah, when I think of the Big Ten, I definitely think of Madison Square Garden.
I think they'll drop one. Indiana at home could be dangerous. Nebraska at home could be dangerous. Nebraska's playing pretty well. I don't think Ohio State, I mean, we saw what happened having Spike Albrecht as a backup point guard. He's a liability, and maybe Dockage is just way better than Spike, but I don't see it. I just feel like guard play in the Big Ten is so down that you can hide a guy against almost any team, but you can't hide a guy against us. And you can hide a guy on Michigan State because their guard play is not the same for their team.
You know, that's basically what, when I watch Clemson go up to Ohio State and just beat them, I mean, going away, beating them, Clemson has three really good guards, and Ohio State just didn't have an answer for that.
If there was a day for us to unleash Carson as a point guard, it's against Ohio State. Just
and
like
I'm
Dakota.
Glad that that's in Mackey, too.
Yeah, but I mean, just put Dakota at the two, Vincent at the three, and then play Klein or play Harms at the four, and then let Carson just run the show. Because there's no way Dockage could stick with Dakota or Carson.
Yeah, and I was able to look it up here. 2008, only four teams from the Big Ten made the tournament: Purdue, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan State. And that was when Indiana State fired Sampson, and they were invited to participate in the tournament, but they fell completely apart and quit on Dockage as the interim coach. So,
well, that wasn't a good year for them, if I remember correctly.
But yeah, that would be the last time that only four teams made it, I believe.
Do we all believe that Purdue is going to win the conference?
I want to say yes. You know, I'm still afraid of the, you know, quote unquote bad game, but you still look at the last two games where Haas has barely done anything, and we have just absolutely blown out both teams. So
I mean, there's only a couple of teams, honestly, that can give us, that have the talent, even if we play poorly, that can beat us. And you know, Michigan's one of those teams.
If we make it through Michigan State with only two losses or less, I think we win, because the last four are at Wisconsin, which we should crush them. Home for Penn State, at Illinois, home for Minnesota, and
yeah, that's like,
we're basically entering the tough stretch right now with Michigan on Thursday, which, yeah, it's at Purdue, but they still scare me because of just the matchup differences that they can present.
They're the worst matchup for us. Yeah, yeah, anyone in the Big Ten, just matchup wise, they are by far the worst. Everyone can do a little bit of something with the ball, and they have a big man that can absolutely give it to us.
Yeah,
Michigan State is entirely based upon bully ball down low with big guys, the athletic Jaren Jackson, and then Miles Bridges, the three-point shooter.
The only thing I think about Michigan State is, if I were to say where are we weakest, it would be if a team just beats us up on the offensive boards. And that's what I worry about Michigan State. I think Michigan State is probably the only team in the conference could do that. But I think we could very well be susceptible to Michigan State coming out and getting like 15 offensive rebounds.
I get that, but I think specifically it needs to be the way Tennessee did it, which is with really big athletic guards. It wasn't our big men that were awful in that Tennessee game. It was our guards blocking out and them having guys that are athletic enough to go around and over Haas and Vincent and whoever we have in down low.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Miles Bridges is that type, but he plays so far away from the basket now. He's just a shooter for them.
If they get there, guys, go. I mean, Cassius Winston's a good athlete, and Langford out there, you know, both of those are former 4- and 5-star guys, and Langford is a tall dude that can athletically maybe give us some issues. Is it Langford? Is that their two guard?
Yeah, I think, is it Jeremy Langford?
Langford.
I feel like, gives us some issues. I
mean, his Michigan offensive State's rebound rate is 3.7 on the year. Cassius Winston is 0.5. Nick Ward is the best offensive rebounder in the country. Jaren Jackson is pretty good at 8.4%. Their guys off the bench rebound the ball pretty well, but Nairn does not. He has an offensive rebound percent of 0.
Yeah, but he's like 3 feet tall.
Sure, that's what I'm saying, though. They're not going to give us a problem. And also, they're just used to Ward getting rebounds. And I watch Ward. We watched Ward last year against Haas. He couldn't move Haas, and that is 90% of what Ward's game is based upon. So he couldn't do anything. He couldn't rebound. He couldn't score. He did not have a good game against him.
Haas has got to stay on the floor, though.
I feel like we are
a little susceptible is depth in the front court when you know Haas gets in foul trouble. Having Harms is obviously great, but say when we've come into a couple of times where Vincent, who tends to pick up fouls in bunches when he does start fouling, and he
I
and
think
Haas
Jaquel
are...
Taylor off the bench is a pretty good third big man.
Yeah.
For like speaking for like big men in the country, like there's not many schools that have another 7-foot option that can play a little. He's a good rebounder.
Problem is at the 4, not the 5. I think we're fine at the 5. I think when we end up, having to go and try to, that's where we've been using Harms recently, but he took Eifert's minutes. I feel like that's where Eden Ewing was supposed to plug into this team, and he didn't, and so I guess Eifert took those minutes. But I think we found out that if we have Eifert on the court, you better have 4 other people that can score around him, because the other team just isn't going to guard him. We have a hard time scoring when he's on the court sometimes. But I think that 4 depth at the 4 position, I feel like we really have to sort of come up with some different stuff when we get in trouble there.
Yeah, I mean, Vincent's always been the most important guy on our team. We can't do anything without him, but I don't know if Jaren Jackson's going to... He's an athlete and he moves pretty well, but he's also a freshman, and I don't know if I trust a freshman to be able to, take a senior on and get him into foul trouble. Vincent's gone up against every variety of athlete and player at this point, and you just have to trust him to not get into trouble.
Yeah, and... see, Vincent doesn't usually get fouls playing defense, though. All the fouls he gets are, over-the-back rebounds and,
I don't think he's going to try to go over Jaren Jackson.
Little cheap reach-ins. Every time Vincent gets in foul trouble, it's not because, three guys have backed him down and he's fouled him. It's because, he was going for an offensive rebound and committed a foul, and he reached in at midcourt and committed a foul.
I'm sure he's going to realize that in that game. That's something coaches will say. If we're smart enough to think that's the biggest issue, I'm sure the coaches will tell them that. And you have to.
I mean, obviously, we're nitpicking on the third best team.
By the way, Nick Ward last year, 2 games against Purdue, he got a total of 3 offensive rebounds and 0 defensive rebounds. Haas was a problem for him. Haas and Biggie were a problem.
Yeah, and it's. I still don't have a good feeling about that game, but I'm kind of glad right now that they already have 2 losses in conference play and that they've had some question marks to where we could get there and not have to win it to win the Big Ten, which would be very nice.
It's a real blessing in disguise that it's an away game, because at bet, it's pretty much a win-win situation as long as we don't get blown out. If we're close on the road, we're going to get moral points for being they stuck with them in that crazy place at Michigan State. If we win, I mean, that's as marquee of a win as any team has in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, no one's expecting us to win. Right? And with a 2-game edge, I don't think Michigan State, I mean, they nearly lost to Rutgers.
Speaking of, you know, taking a little bit more of a look at a national perspective, obviously right now we kind of control our own destiny for a number one seed. How many losses could we have and still get a number one seed, which would be huge for this team, I think.
I feel like with the...
You go, Casey.
I just feel like it's more so, it's not so much the number of losses, it's the number of bad losses, which is kind of a cheap answer just because the Big Ten's so bad that literally... besides losing to Ohio State, Michigan, or Michigan State, they're all bad losses. So I think you have to, the way our schedule works out, we just have to, we need to protect home court. The Michigan win will go a long way in securing a number one.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't lose to Maryland at home. We probably need that one. I think if we win Michigan at home, Maryland at home, Ohio State at home, even if we lose in Michigan State, we wrap up a number one for sure.
Yeah, you're looking at 17-1 there, unless we just...
Right.
Really trip up against somebody.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, we could probably lose one of those three tough home games remaining and lose to Michigan State and have a number one seed wrapped up.
I think it would be, if we lost to Ohio State and Michigan State, say, I think we'd probably need to go to win the Big Ten tournament.
Really?
Yeah, I think to get a number one seed...
I think we just have to get to the championship if we lose two in the regular season.
Well, cause I'm just going to assume we're going to play Michigan State there. And right. I assume that number one seed may very well be between Michigan State and Purdue if a Big Ten team's going to be. I mean,
out of the question that Purdue and Michigan State both end up with number one seeds.
Well, here's the interesting thing.
So bad. I don't know if they'd do that.
The other teams aren't playing well. Oklahoma just lost again.
That's true.
I mean, pretty much, yes, Virginia and Villanova look pretty locked up. I guess people love Duke. They're five, but, like, they keep losing games. Like, our pedigree looks great. We have a ton of quality wins. We have some away wins now. We've got the chance to pick up a few more.
Yeah, because we have six Tier 1 wins right now. And depending on really what happens, it could be seven because there's that cutoff on the road where the top 75 count as a Tier 1 win. We got Minnesota at 76 right now.
Minnesota's not moving up.
They are circling the toilet.
They're not getting better.
Yeah,
like, a lot of our computer rankings are based off the fact that Minnesota is still judged as a good team.
Yeah,
they're not anymore.
Yeah.
But Michigan's home win can move up for us if they stay hot. Maryland can get better.
Isn't Michigan staying hot really good? Contingent on beating us?
Well, Michigan's currently at 37. So
no one expects Michigan to win in Mackey Arena. They can lose that game and then just not lose to anyone else but Michigan State and have a good. I don't think they play them again.
I think the only teams that have a chance of beating us in Mackey are Michigan and Ohio State. I just don't think Maryland has it right now. They have not played well on the road. They're 1-4 away from home, and the one win was at Illinois by a point. So
is Jackson still hurt for them?
Yeah, he's out for the year.
Yeah, they've got guys out for the year.
They just don't.
So they've lost by 30, by 22. And by one in their last three road games against Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan. So, you know, that just gives you an idea of what we're looking at. They do play at Indiana tomorrow night, which will be very interesting considering we get Indiana next.
Are you guys buying into this Indiana thing? Because I'm not.
What, that they're terrible?
No, that they're decent.
No, I'm not buying that at all.
There has been talk about, are they pushing for the NCAA tournament? Are they possibly a decent team?
No, they are not. Thank you.
Well,
team.
The thing is you
see?
Cannot...
That
you
tone
cannot...
in Travis's voice. I don't like it.
Yeah, like he's going to say the Big Ten's really bad, so maybe they pick up some really crappy wins. But they didn't beat anybody. Notre Dame, but Notre Dame's in the Not toilet either. Right now, too. They haven't even beat anybody decent.
Well, I cannot in good conscience write them off because 2010, we were rolling through the Big Ten at the time.
2010 has nothing to do.
They were 10-21. They were a worse team and played us to a 3-point game in Bloomington. They were a worse team that year and played us to a 3-point game in Bloomington because anything can happen in Bloomington.
I was in Michigan City at a casino during that game, and that was a weird game.
And that was when Verdell Jones had...
You know what the difference is between that team and this team?
This Purdue team's a lot better.
A lot better. That team had holes.
Yeah.
They called everyone past Keaton Grant on the rotation.
Yeah. So does it? Does this produce in your guys' mind? Obviously, it's
best
really
team of my
early.
Lifetime. Hands down.
Does this team get to a Final Four?
Yes. Yes. Fuck it. Yes.
Casey's going all in. I'll say that the Final Four is such a. I feel like the Final Four is such a terrible metric to judge teams. I feel like Purdue really
is.
Gets,
no, the tournament is an awful
because
way to judge
it's
teams. But I believe
just a crapshoot about who you play, when you play, and where you play.
Coach Painter literally said this is his best chance to get to the Final Four. Coaches don't.
I mean,
him definitely does not just say that.
Right. No, I think this team certainly has the potential to get to the Final Four.
Oh my God.
I would give it a more, you know, but to say they are definitely going to get to the Final Four when it's just such a up in the air. Who do we play? Do we play end up playing a team that just gets crazy hot, or we have one of those cold shooting nights in a dome and, you know,
by the way, is Purdue now the number one shooting 3-point team in the country?
It'd have to be, right?
That's Ken Palm is telling me.
We're up
number
there
one.
For sure.
Number one? That would make sense.
43.7%. We have an entire point or 1.1% above Wofford.
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 It's Wofford.
Low Ford.
Okay, we're third in terms of percentage. William and Mary is at 44.5. Wofford's at 44. We're at 43.7.
What is Ken Palm smoking?
Well, this is just straight like actual made percentage and stuff. Now we
what does
made
Ken Palm use?
I don't know.
Is there an algorithm? Most swishes.
All right. So football. Yes, we've won a bowl game. We were in a bowl game. My God. I mean,
is that your intro? Yeah. I'm gonna cut that out, and then I'm just gonna go bowl game.
I mean. For being 7-6 and, you know, what would otherwise be a mediocre season for so many programs, it's just such a relief to actually be competitive and do what we did this past season. And, you know, I know that recruiting is going to be big going forward here, especially as Brahm obviously has to replace quite a bit on this team. But we've got some good guys coming in. And I know Drew said that we've got some strong offers going out. So take it away, Drew.
All right. First of all, I think we should probably mention that Tony Levine is basically retiring from coaching. He's walking away. You know, be more with his family. Coaching is such a grind.
He's got a lot of kids.
Yeah, he's got like four, and they're all 2 years apart.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand Tony's probably under a little bit of stress. Being on the road all the time probably isn't, you know, super conducive to all of that. And so I think he's stepping away from coaching. And that's a big loss for Purdue. He was, you know, the former head coach at Houston, and he brought a lot to the table and for special teams and recruiting. So that's going to be a tough guy to replace.
But it should be interesting because I know special teams, while they had some moments this year, we had absolutely nothing in the return game, both punts and kickoffs. And then that was a big part of it.
Yeah, Levine's specialties are like fake punts and kicks, and all of that was sort of his doing.
How much of like returning is X and O's? It's mostly just what your return is capable of, right?
Yeah, pretty much get going north and south as fast as you can and hope nobody gets in your way.
So who coming in can be a difference maker there, other than obviously Rondale Moore?
Well, we've got Rondale Moore.
Let's not skip over him. I want Drew to give me like 45 seconds of Rondale Moore talk.
Oh, yes.
Rondale Moore is the most explosive receiver we've recruited since probably Dorian Bryant.
Hold on.
He's got some Dorian Bryant in him, doesn't he?
Travis, yeah. Can you please mute your mic before you unzip?
So Dorian Bryant, Rondale is probably the most explosive player since, you know, Dorian. He does a little bit of everything. He's not going to be your, like, traditional wide receiver. I think he went out to the All-Star game, and they weren't quite sure what to do with him. Because he's going to be a guy that's going to run the jet sweep. He's going to probably motion him in the backfield. We're going to use him in the slot. He's not going to be like, you know, stick him outside the numbers and let him run routes all day. It's not quite the player he is. But he's more of a multi-purpose tool, if you will.
Is Dorian Bryant, so he's not really the pure comp for...
No, it's not really. Just like maybe athletically, Dorian was more of just a wide receiver. And I think Rondale's going to do more of that. But then again,
Tavon Austin for St. Louis Rams?
Yeah. I think Tavon Austin or Ray McLeod from Clemson last year, who I watched a lot. Who just sort of played the slot, and then he'd run the option routes. They'd run a lot of screen. We're on a lot of screens to him, both maybe even him out of the backfield in the screen, and or out with the wide receiver quick screen. But he is going to be good. I think you'll see Caron Catlett play a good bit next year. He's our other sort of, at least in the return game. If we're gonna get a
position, is he?
He's a wide receiver. We played him early in the year.
Oh.
Yeah, he started as the kick returner, I know, the first couple games, but then kind of faded and didn't play a whole lot after that.
Yeah, I think you'll see him. He is an explosive athlete, another guy a lot like Rondale Moore, but I think it just took him a little while. You know, it's weird, I guess, sometimes when you're playing in a smaller school, you got to sort of readjust your game when you used to be able to just turn it on and outrun everybody. All of a sudden, everybody's just as fast as you are. I feel like Catlett had a little bit of trouble with that. Like, he tried to do too much. But
here's my question. I keep hearing, are we actually losing that much on the team this year?
We're losing seven starters defensively.
On defense, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we lose.
Offense is fine.
One of the big things that we're going to lose is you got to break in new cornerbacks. And we saw in the Nebraska game what happens when you lose a top corner and you don't really have anybody to replace
Hunt.
Him ready
to go. Are we losing
go.
Hunt?
Yeah, we're losing Hunt.
Okay. We're losing Hunt and Okonye. We're losing both of them.
Okay.
And then we also lost Hardy, who was kind of the number three guy too, because he's the one that came in when Hunt was injured against Nebraska, and he's gone.
We have anyone like sitting in our roster that were pretty like decently ranked who Drew you were excited about getting during the Hazel era on defense that might be ready to break out?
Simeon Smiley will be the guy in the as far as defensive backs, you'll see him. He played in the bowl game, and you saw him play a good bit, and he's one of our more highly rated Hazel recruits. He's out of Florida, and I would say, if I was going to say the number one corner starting out would probably be Smiley. And then after that, it's just sort of a jumble of three-star guys that could be really good, just haven't played much. So Dedrick Mackey, he's one out of Booker T. Washington. He's a freshman this year. He has some talent. He came in pretty highly rated. I think he may have redshirted this year. So
yeah, he did.
I would probably say, as far as talent-wise sitting out there on the roster, that Dedrick Mackey is probably one to circle as a guy you're probably going to see. He was one of the more highly sought-after guys. Other than that, Josh Hayes is gone. He was fairly highly recruited. He didn't have a lot of offers, but he was ranked fairly high.
And he had some experience. And I know in terms of experience, we still have Tim Kaysen, but I know he's struggled at times.
Yeah, Kaysen was another fairly highly rated guy coming in that just haven't figured out. We got Mike Little, who's a taller cornerback out of California that is still on the roster. He came in. He was another solid three-star guy. So, I mean, there's some... this is really going to be whoever shows up in camp.
Considering, at the beginning of the year, we thought our defense was going to be garbage, right?
This past year? Yeah.
Yeah.
We thought there were some definite holes in the defense that actually weren't there.
Yeah, so we lost guys that mostly the staff was able to turn into really good Big Ten players. So it's probably okay to assume it's as bad as losing seven seniors sounds. It's not going to be as bad as it might be.
Well, you can say that.
Because the young players have been able to develop.
Except that those guys, those seniors, were probably a part of Hazel's best recruiting class. Those were probably some of his best, Jalen Robinson and Juwan Bentley. Danny Yee was probably, I think he was just a two-star guy out of Georgia. So, I mean, they redeveloped a good bit, and we moved around a good bit of pieces. I felt like we finally, the coaching staff finally got some of these guys in their best positions.
Is Marcus Bailey a potential Big Ten player of the year on defense?
Potentially. I mean, he's got the talent, and he'll have some of the hype. I think he'll probably be preseason either first team or second team all Big Ten.
Rightfully
just
so.
A junior?
Yeah, he'll be a junior. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I assume they're going to keep him on the outside and use Derek Barnes as their, you know, big thumper at middle linebacker like we had this year with Bentley. Freeze Bailey up to do a little bit more in coverage. But definitely, I think he's going to have to put up the big numbers for the defense to be good. So I think you'll see him around the ball a lot. I think that'll be part of the coaching staff's main goal is to get him around the ball a lot. So definitely.
Well, I'm looking at Hazel's last recruiting class, his last full recruiting class in 2016, because I know 2017 was a lot of maintenance and put together by Brom. He had 6 3-star players in that recruiting class that was ranked 73rd nationally, and of those 6, 2 have already left. In Terrence Landers and Josh Hayes.
You can make a defense with 4 players, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned Smiley. You got Navon Mosley, who's already starting. You got Brandon Schumann, who was a 3-star.
Schumann's good. I like Schumann.
And the sixth guy was Javonte Ferguson, which I don't know. Yeah, wait, he's
he
gone.
He never got here.
Yeah, he did never get here. So, yeah, of the best players that he got that final year, 3 of them are already gone. Which
yeah, it was not great.
So I think in that you're going to see this is going to be the first year that the roster has more of Brahms players than Hazel's players. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the guys that are left over from Hazel, because they are the ones that, you know, this is where they have to buy in and they have to develop. And the coaching staff is going to have some 2-star guys that come up and play like 4-star guys.
Drew, how can you really expect true freshmen that aren't the supreme athletes or 4 or 5-star guys to play right away in the Big Ten?
No, I would say with the exception is I think defensive back is the maybe one, just straight up cornerback. I think probably the best bet to be able to come in right away and do that as say like a 3-star player.
Is that just a physical tool thing? Because you don't need to be as strong or built.
Yeah, you don't need to be quite as strong. Fast is fast. And, you know, if you're quick and you've got some good instincts, you can get on the field early. Physically, what you're required to do isn't being in the middle. I don't think if you're having to play like freshman defensive tackles, unless they're 5-star guys or, you know, 4-star guys, you're in trouble. Same thing with defensive end and linebackers and safeties. But I feel like you can get away with it at cornerback, which is what I'm hoping we're able to sort of do with a couple of these guys.
Let's move on to basketball. We're already at like 50 minutes.
All right. Cool. And this could be our final topic, as you guys said. And it comes into play with the Big Ten Player of the Year race and the first team All Big Ten for the 5 spots there. But as Casey suggested, who is our best player? Is it Carson? Is it Vince? Is it Haas? Is it Dakota? Do we put all 5 on the... I think if we go 18-0 in the Big Ten, the first team All Big Ten should just be the starting 5, honestly.
I like it.
I mean, to be honest, I think Purdue has 3 first team All Big Ten players. I'm not willing to take Dakota off the list. And I think just to answer who our best, it has to be Carson now that he's knocking down 3-point shots. He is literally unguardable. I have been to most of the games this year. I was to a lot of games last year. I watched him on the floor against good teams, bad teams, really good teams. He is in person. He is the quickest athlete on the floor every game that I've seen. And now he has the skill and the pace and the knowledge. He's recently pulled off 2 games where he had at least 7 assists and no turnovers. You wouldn't have believed that of him last year.
Mm-hmm.
And add that with his just knockdown shooting, his ability to create a shot at the mid-range or at the basket. He's unpredictable in a good way on offense. Like, you can never feel comfortable guarding him if you're a defender. And I just think that is something so special that Purdue has not had. And I think that's why this team is so much different. And honestly, Vincent Edwards is, he's still our most important player. If one game you had to choose someone not to lose, it'd be Vincent.
Yeah, I think
Carson's
he's our most,
still our best player. Do I sound like Dan Dockage?
No, you do sound a little like Dan. But I agree with you. I feel like just sheer basketball talent wise, we haven't had a player like Carson Edwards in a long time.
And that takes into account Biggie last year, who was an exceptional talent, but a different type of talent.
Different type of talent, yeah. With the type of sort of talent that Carson is, I'm trying to think back to a guard that we've ever had at Purdue.
Etwan was there. Like, Etwan didn't look the same.
No, it didn't look the same. It had a similar effect, I guess.
Yeah.
Etwan was the last guy that I think, if we absolutely needed a basket at any point, Etwan was the last guy I would be like, yes, let's get it to him. He will find some sort of shot, be it a three-pointer, be it a drive, a runner, whatever.
Or the pass. Like, he's a playmaker, too.
Right. I mean, but in that, you know, you also have that. I think it's also what helps make Purdue so dangerous this year, because with our starting five, you have all five players on the floor that if you're out there, I'm not even sure who I want taking the last shot. It's like, okay, you can go to Haas because you have a gigantic 7'2" man that can't be guarded one-on-one by anybody in the country. You've got Carson.
And can hit his free throws.
Yeah, and he hits his free throws. And he's already won a game by hitting
his Just tell him that he has two free throws instead of a one-on-one.
Yeah. You've got Carson, who can do a little bit of anything offensively, either one-on-one or create and pass off. You've got Matthias, who, you know, if we needed a three, I want Matthias or Klein shooting it, which, you know, that's even factoring in Klein as a sixth man.
I still think Klein has a clutch gene. I don't know what it is. I can't get that true freshman year out of my head. He made shots consistently that he had no business just draining.
Oh, and don't forget last year he hit some big shots at Penn State in a game where we
Right. I just meant, like, as a true freshman, like, you're not supposed to do what he did.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Klein is he comes in, he's gunning. He is going to pull the trigger on one of those threes. Like, and he's like looking for it. As soon as it hits his hand, it takes a lot of persuasion for him not to, like, put it up.
I don't see that. See, I think he takes as smart a shots as anyone on the team. Actually, to be honest, he takes the smartest shots now. It used to be him and Dakota, 1A, 1B. Dakota's starting to look for shots more, and that means taking some more iffy shots. I feel like Ryan Klein hasn't taken two bad shots in, like, his entire career.
Yeah, I could see that. And
I'm not saying he's taking, like, bad shots, but he's shooting.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he knows what he is.
Yeah.
Like,
the light is on.
When Klein your hand is not touching my nose. I'm open.
Yeah. So not that he's taking bad shots, but the green light's on for Klein.
No.
I like that. I like that he comes in and the whole
off
team.
The dribble shot against Iowa. Yeah, the record.
I feel like we really look for him when he comes in too. I feel like when he comes in, he runs really hard off those screens, and I feel like he almost turns into the center of our offense for just a little while. He's looking to hit threes.
That's a good point. Like, as much as we hate Dockage just for being Dockage, like, I think he does actually appreciate Purdue for the right reasons, and also he notices a lot of little things. Our guys come off really hard off screens.
Yeah,
they really create space that other player that you don't get when you just lollygag through a screen. Our guys are great at that, and it's because we know they don't have to shoot. They just want that separation to get the defense in rotation, and they're also unselfish. They know that that creates looks for everyone else.
Just like yesterday, that possession where we're up, like, what, 30, 35, and I counted eight passes, God. Everyone touched the ball, and it
this
led
is me
to...
unzipping.
And it led to a No-Gel Eastern dunk on a little dump-off. And it was, as I called it, it was sensual basketball. It really was. And if we could
did
keep...
you, Travis, did you answer who you thought our best player was?
I don't think anybody did. I think you answered.
I said Carson.
This team is just so perfectly balanced. And it's like, I love a guy like P.J. Thompson who... Oh, you mean I only am going to be taking three or four shots a night, and it's usually wide open threes, and he's hitting at 51% right now, and has just had 14 points on 14 points on 8 of 11 3-point shooting the last two games.
Speaking of being a gunner now,
PJ
shooting, like, His release this year is at least 0.4 seconds quicker.
Yeah, no, and he sped that thing up.
Taking it. Like, it's way faster.
We are going to miss PJ Thompson. I was talking about this earlier today. PJ's the kind of guy that he's obviously not going to go to the NBA. I don't even know if he's going to play over in Europe or anything.
He could play overseas. If you can shoot that well, you can play overseas.
But as a result, can we just keep him in college in perpetuity as long as he feels like playing? I mean, seriously.
I feel like it's fair. I mean, the answer is no. More athletic, so.
Yeah. I mean, he's like the perfect, you know, I'm a college point guard and only a college point guard player. And
I think I brought this up in chat. I think there should be, the same way we have a, like, most improved award in the NBA, there should be a most improved award that starts every year, every freshman year, and every 4 years that class someone gets the most improved award, and they should call it the PJ Thompson Award.
Oh, great, because PJ was taking a lot of these open threes and he wasn't afraid to take them as a freshman. And
right, he just airballed them in the NCAA tournament because he wasn't a good shooter.
Yeah, he shot 28% from three as a freshman. He's been over 40 every year since, including 51 this year.
This year, like, literally, he is not the same player. Like, last year, the last 2 years, he shot well, but it's because he shot only wide open looks.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he got into the range, like, he'd take a couple pull-ups here or there. PJ now, if he's got the client, like, if you're not right on him.
Yeah, it's open, going up.
And it's going up, and it's going out quick. Like, yeah. Literally, his jump shot is so fast. I played against him after his freshman year in the summer at the Co-Rec, and he just looked like a guy on the floor. Like, the jump shot was slow. Like, you knew when it was coming. Now, that thing is, like, pure quick. You can't get to it. Like, he's making threes with guys launching at him that are 6 inches taller, 8 inches taller. He has become a really, really good basketball player, and like you said, perfect for a team full of other guys that can score, because he doesn't take bad shots and he doesn't eat up possessions.
Right, and he'll be there and he gets the open looks because everybody's worried about everyone else. And I know I've written about it several times. He always seems to hit the big shot when we need it. You know, he had 5 points last year against Iowa State. But what shot did he hit? He knocks down a three right after they had taken the lead for the first time. I mean, he's just.
So is that your answer, PJ?
I would say PJ's the most clutch. I'll go with Carson is the best on the team.
Drew?
I think Carson's the best. And he's what makes this team so unique with four seniors.
I think that Vincent's probably the most irreplaceable player on the roster.
I think one of us needs to answer Vincent.
I'm going to say Vincent because I feel like he's
been the best player the last three games.
And if you took his skill set out, there's nobody left to replace. Yeah, like nobody can do what he does. And I'm not saying that. I mean, it's not that our other guys can do what Carson does, but they can still do it in a different way.
They're both kind of. It's kind of like you need two pillars to hold up like a really big house, and they're each that pillar.
Yeah.
Like, Vincent does all the dirty stuff while still being a great shooter, a great passer, really good rebounder, athletic, long. But Carson is how you can't key on Purdue players. You can't jump out on Dakota. You can't double Isaac. Because you can double in the post if everyone is just a shooter. Because you just rotate, because you rotate way ahead of time. You're not worried about them pump faking and driving. But with Carson, you can't let him have the ball while your defense is not set.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a set defense, he's getting a shot.
Okay, and speaking of pump faking and driving, what percentage of the time would you say Vincent travels when he pump fakes and drives?
Every time.
Would you say that would be 100%? Because I think they could just blow the whistle every time. And every time they do it, I'm never like, oh, terrible.
But they don't call it. This year they haven't called it at all.
I've seen it. I think they've been called a couple times. I think a certain refs will.
It used to be a couple times a game.
Yeah. I think he's still doing it the same amount.
He's getting the senior calls now, though.
Yeah. He kicks
it. I'm with you.
Loses both his his pivot foot just sort of moves around everywhere.
It takes so long. Yeah.
Well, this should tell you how valuable Vincent is when arguably the game at Michigan was one of his worst that he's had. And, you know, he was struggling to score and everything. What's he do? He hits the biggest three of the game to tie it.
That three was a 10 out of 10 difficulty.
Yes, and he nailed it. I mean, that barely touched net on the way down.
Here's how I feel about Vincent, and we saw this at the Iowa game. If he hits his first shot or first couple shots and just looks like good on offense, I'll turn the game off. Like, I'm not worried. The game's over. If Vincent is really good Vincent, no team can beat us.
Yeah, oh, like when he just eviscerated Minnesota in the first half?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he just torched him. Torched him.
Oh, how sexy is that little step back jumper that he's...
No, I don't want him to take it.
I love that.
I think it's his
shot.
Worst shot.
No, you know what? I want him to take that shot when we're down, like, we're up like 15.
Yeah.
I don't want him to ever take it because I don't want to.
I
want to
see that
because he makes one true. And then he goes into like his post up moves, and I'm like, eh.
I love that shot. I feel like that's my favorite shot of the year.
I'd rather Carson take it.
Is it the step back? Step the 1 foot step foot back from Vincent.
So how do we feel about the Michigan game? That's what this all equates to. We've got a giant home game Thursday.
Honestly, if I were to be totally honest, I think
you're scared.
Yeah, we know.
And I think we're more likely to lose this one than the Michigan State game. And I do not like the way that we match up against them. And I know Painter was doing some different things with the switches, but they got hot and were hitting those threes off of those switches whenever they had Haas guarding a perimeter guy.
Can I make a prediction?
They were hitting.
We're not switching Haas this game.
That was
it was
they
just,
say I mean it worked, we won. I know, yeah. He didn't want him to go off. I don't think it ever looked good.
I just don't think
he will. I think Bayline's gonna have that in his head, and I think Painter's gonna think he has that in his head, so I think we'll come up with something different. Honestly, I don't know what it is.
I say that though, but I have thought for a very long time that we are not losing in Mackey Arena this year. And so,
How special would that be for this senior class?
If there's a team that's going to beat us in Mackey, I think it's going to be Michigan. And I think we get it done, though. I think it'll be a tight game. I think they'll play us close because they're playing some good ball right now. But I think we get it done, and we still beat them in Mackey.
We just dominated Michigan most of the game.
Yeah, and I think we're untouchable in Mackey. I think we could beat anybody in the country in Mackey this year.
You know where you're not untouchable? East Lansing.
Yeah, and that will be that. I still think we're going to lose that one. But I think we go undefeated in Mackey. I think we go at least 7-2 on the road, and I think we win the Big Ten at 16-2.
Drew?
I think this Michigan game is I think all but most of these Michigan games kind of is house more of an advantage or a liability, because that's what sort of when Haas is in, can he punish them down low? Because if he can't, he can't play.
Right.
Because
I like that he's had two bad games.
Yeah,
he's due for a breakout game, and he did. Punish.
I feel good about that.
He can stay on the court against Michigan, but for him to stay on the court means that he is in the post just punishing their skinny little shooters that they have inside. Like that, he can do that and stay on the court and be effective against Michigan. But if he is not, if he starts playing passively in the post, then they're just going to eat him up on the outside. He can't guard their 4 or 5. And they'll put him in the pick and roll every time. The pick
I think
and pop.
He'll get Wagner in foul trouble, though.
Yeah.
Because I mean, think he's kind of got in Wagner's head a little bit.
Every close game, like, Haas has been pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, the Louisville game, he only had 9 points, but he drew a lot of fouls. And they weren't all free throw fouls. A lot of them were early in the half. And Louisville's a weird team where they just have, like, three different Mo Wagners. But he has been really good in big games this year.
Yeah.
And I think he has this one circled, especially since the narrative after that game was what Painter had to do with his players to guard Wagner.
Yeah.
Wagner. I've said it like 18 different ways.
I don't know, man. I think as much as Haas might want to go out there and try it, I mean, I understand that. I just don't know if he's physically capable of handling that matchup. I don't think he can move laterally well enough, no matter how much he wants to.
No, you definitely have to, like, game plan something to keep him from getting burned. But on the other end, we've seen him, like,
that's
I
it.
Mean,
that's...
he drew the foul. Like,
yeah, that's where he
it's
has
because
to be.
Wagner knows he has no chance against him if he catches that ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like, against Michigan, I like Haas in, like, shorter, like, spurts where they don't get in that rhythm and where they just start picking us apart with that pick and roll, because they usually
guys
take
am I crazy
a couple should, possessions to get into that.
Should we break out a brand new lineup of death? Should Vincent not play the five, guard Wagner for a bit, bring out Klein, bring out Matthias, bring out Carson, and bring out Eastern?
And just have a straight three-point shooting contest with Michigan.
Yes, just run.
We'll
it.
Just hold a three-point shooting contest. We'll see who can...
Just run it.
I don't
I trust our guys over there, guys.
I don't think Eastern's the offensive threat that we need him to be yet, unfortunately.
It doesn't matter with that four with him, because Klein can guard the four of Michigan. He was guarding it up in Ann Arbor, and he did a really good job in the post. He's surprisingly big. He's really strong. He's much better this year anticipating and moving laterally.
And we had him
but
on
just
the
go
court.
At it. That's let Eastern like, Eastern was a prob is a problem for people. Like, he's the he might be the other answer to the Wagner problem. Just have him, whoever he's guarding, come over and double on Wagner. He's long enough to get in the way, quick enough to recover.
And I've liked Nogel's play the last couple games too. I think the light's starting to come on a little bit.
He's such a weird player, man. Yeah, he is such a weird, like, he in like
no
4 years, he's gonna be the weirdest, like big left-handed rebounding non-shooting point guard.
And it's like, I like him, and I don't want to curse him at all, but weren't we saying the same thing about Basil?
No.
No, Basil, no. You know
Basil
when
couldn't
Nogel,
have the ball in his hand.
You know when Nogel's on the court, I sometimes would go, even when Basil was playing a lot, and like go 5-10 minute stretches without seeing him.
Eastern sees the game.
Yeah.
He knows how to pass. He knows how to move. Defensively, I mean, he's everything Basil was defensively, only a point guard.
Yeah,
don't put those two together. Honestly, Barlow's the good comparison just for what he's capable of, but I mean, like, good Barlow.
Yeah.
Because there was a while there where Barlow was a game changer.
Oh, Barlow.
He had attitude stuff and off-court issues, but, like, on the court, he was a good passer. He saw things. He knew how to play. Eastern, like, once he understands the speed of the game, he's thrown off some passes where you're just like, he sees the next level of things. He knows where openings are. He just can't get there yet.
And he's a big dude. I feel like that's like an enormous point guard. Like,
how about those two rebounds?
Eastern Wheeler pick and roll next year is going to be the most athletic play in Purdue sports history. It is. Like, you guys haven't seen a bunch of Wheeler. The dude is nearly 7 foot. It's insane.
He looks good on the bench.
All right.
I think he played center in high school, if I remember correctly, on his prep school team. Yeah, I think that's right. I think he played center. Right. He's like 6'9", 6'10", easy.
Yeah, he's 6'10". He's every bit. Like, he didn't look small next to Harms.
That's good. Well, I think we should bring this creaky ship in for a landing here. And any final thoughts, Drew?
Nope, just looking forward to the Michigan game.
How about you, Casey? Any final thoughts?
I love this team so much.
I admit that they're threatening to overcome my Purdue PTSD. And
I'm like there. Like, I have had more conversations with Purdue fans where I'm at the end going, dude, believe, it's fine. Just take it. It'll be good. Just swallow that pill. It'll be.
I'm trying.
Have fun.
I'm trying so hard, but I've been down this road before, man. But if there's a team that's going to do it, I think this is it. And I'm really excited to see how this comes through. And I'm trying to go in with guarded optimism and everything else. But when we've won 15 in a row and we're looking as good as we did at moments against Iowa, and yeah, Iowa's not very good, but it's beyond that. It's just...
I want to run off some numbers for you.
All right.
I'm just going to read a list of 15 numbers.
All right. We'll do numbers and then we'll sign off here. So go ahead.
25, 9, 5, 5, 30, 25, 25, Carry the four, make it a 49, 32, 31, 12, 11, 34, 28, and 23. Those are our margins of victory since Friday, November 24th of last year. Oof. That's every Big Ten game of the season and two games against Arizona and Louisville.
And Butler. Don't forget Butler in there.
And Butler.
Yeah, because Butler's quality. I mean, I got to give him some credit. And then I'll do one number for you guys. It was from a good friend of the blog, Tyler Trent, still battling cancer, so get well soon, Tyler, pointed out to us today that Purdue trailed IUPUI for 9 minutes and 42 seconds in 8 Big Ten games total. Purdue has trailed 9 minutes and 45 seconds across 8 Big Ten games. That's absurd right there.
That's crazy. Can I quote your quote with another quote?
Sure.
Whoa.
We're going to call this the Andrew Holmes because it comes from Andrew Holmes in our group chat.
Yeah.
It's a Sam Vecini tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, with Carson Edwards on the floor, Purdue has a 1.28 points per possession mark. How good is that? In terms of raw efficiency, the best overall team number in the KenPom era is 1.21 points per possession.
Oh, geez.
So pretty much, Carson's our best player, and Purdue has the greatest offense of all time when he's on the floor.
I'm going to need a doctor in 4 hours, man.
I'm going to need a wet nap.
you keep...
On that note, for Casey, for Drew, and myself, we thank you for listening. We actually have a couple sponsors right now we can mention. We have Martin Vintage supplying some nice vintage t-shirts that are available if you go to our site. They're right there on the front page where you can go and look at the designs. Game Day Depot. Actually now is Web Community Tees. They have some of our actual site t-shirts like the Defense Lives in the Air and the John Octius one, Baptizing the Masses. So
Baptizing the Masses!
So if you want those, I guess they would be kind of the Hammer and Rail sponsors. They provide us with some good shirts and everything else. And I've got a couple of them. I'm actually wearing one of the Mike Martin Vintage shirts right now. It's really good. So we do thank you for listening. Give them a visit. Buy some shirts from them. They look great. They help out a couple of Purdue businesses. And let's just keep this basketball season rolling. So for Casey, for Drew, and myself, let's boiler up.